Fear pierces my chest, and I realize that I need to incapacitate him quickly. Take his eye out, tear his nose in half. With my thin, dull blade, his face is my only option, and he's not going to let me get close to it. I need to use everything I have, but all I have is this shitty rapier. I couldn't bring hidden knives to the trial. The rules forbid hidden weapons. Sure, I'm faster and stronger than I used to be, but so is he. I can feel my face going red, my body overheating. I'm drenched with sweat, and my lungs are whistling, constricting. One last desperate idea takes root in my mind. As he swings at me again, I dodge to the side and feint with my rapier, driving him to parry. His hand nears mine, and I press the back of my hand against his, letting my telepathy powers unfurl.
I will put you in your place, Demi-Fay.
His voice rings in my head.
Get your hand off me.
I can sense what he's thinking, that I'm trying to grab his wrist, and I know what he has planned. He's going to pull his arm away, up and to the left. Swinging, I strike with my rapier down and to the right. It's a move that makes no sense in my current position, but as he reacts, he exposes his midriff. I thrust my blade at his stomach.
Ugh, he grunts.
I leap back and grin. He reacts like I assumed he would, furiously. Now he's coming for me twice as hard. I dodge once, twice, three times, then pivot. With a quick twist, I manage to touch his exposed neck with my fingertips. His thoughts pour into mine, a river of calculating rage. I sense his next strike, move to avoid it before he even starts, and suddenly, I'm behind him. I get another thrust in. Tarquin is an asshole, but he's not stupid. He seems to realize he's being manipulated. He whirls, but he doesn't go for me again. Instead, he studies me warily. He's breathing hard, and a lock of his slick brown hair dangles before his eyes. He presses his thin lips into a line, breathing through his flared nostrils. As he tries to figure out what's going on, his pale features look pinched. I need to come up with a plan that's more than just reacting to his strikes. When I touch him, I can feel his thoughts, and when I stop touching him, they dissipate, but not instantly. I can almost feel the link between us stretching before it snaps away. Can I use my powers to maintain that link? To keep our minds connected even when I'm not in contact with him? I have to use every advantage I can get. He darts forward and swings at me, using the length of his sword to keep me from touching him. He doesn't know I'm telepathic, but he seems to have figured out that I'm trying to touch him for a reason. My breathing is already labored. I have to finish this fight soon. So when he swings again, I let the dull blade hit my armored side. The strike knocks the wind out of me, and I know it will leave a brutal bruise under the armor. I nearly fall down, but instead I grab at his hand, faintly brushing his fingers.
I'm about to end you, bitch.
I already sense his next move and barely manage to duck as the sword goes for my head. Then I leap back and focus on the connection between us. I'm not touching him, but it's still there. The telepathic strand stretches between us, and I enforce it with everything I have, pushing my powers as far as they will go. And it doesn't snap. Tarquin's thoughts keep pouring in, disturbing and extremely useful. Amid his hatred of me and downright insanity, I can glimpse his moves before he makes them. I can dodge them more easily, even make a few attacks of my own. But it's not enough to turn the tide of our duel. For one thing, part of my concentration is constantly on using my magic, and I'm also fighting with the distraction of his insipid thoughts in my mind. My breathing is getting harder. Since his strike hit me, I feel like I can't fill my lungs, and it's taking a toll. I'm getting dizzy. I have maybe 1 or 2 minutes before he manages to take me down, and I doubt the judges will stop the trial in time since they didn't give a fuck before. Gritting my teeth, I draw even more telepathic power and pour my concentration into our connection. I sift through his surface thoughts, his hatred, his anger, his intentions. I drill down, 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 deeper into his psyche, looking for the source, something I can use. A memory. A family dinner. Tarquin is a little boy at a long dining table set with candles. His parents leave to go into the drawing room, and he sits with his cousins. Tarquin is ecstatic, left to talk to the big boys. He wants to show them his collection of fey coins. He reaches into his pocket and pulls one out. The moment he does, one of his cousins slaps his hands and the coins tumble away. Tarquin yelps with surprise.
Listen to the little mummy's boy cry, his cousin says, in a plummy accent. Poor thing dropped his pennies. Mummy's boy, more like mummy's little baby, another cousin pipes up. Tarquin sniffles and bends down to pick up one of the coins. The oldest cousin kicks him in the bum, and he falls over, burning with anger. He's flat on the embroidered rug, wanting to call for his mum, but they'll only tease him more. Oh, poor mummy's baby fell down, says his cousin. You know what I think? I think the little mummy's boy stinks. Did he soil himself? Is that right, baby? The other one jeers. Have you not been house-trained yet? Shall we put this stinking puppy in the dog kennel with the other animals? The cousins are closing in on him as he scuttles back, cornered. The looks on their faces are cruel, vindictive, predatory. But you better be quiet. The Rottweilers will kill you if you cry. A sword swings inches from my face and I tumble back, gasping. For a few seconds, I've been lost in Tarquin's horrible memory. He nearly finished me. Thank the gods I snapped out of it in time. I suppose I know what turned him into such an asshole. Viciousness begets more viciousness. For the first time, I almost feel sorry for him. But I can't afford to. Whatever happened to him in the past, this Tarquin is literally trying to kill me, and I need to take him down. What happened, mummy's boy? I say, imitating his cousin's accent. Do you belong in the kennel with the other animals? His eyes widen.
What did you just say?
He snarls. Poor mummy's boy. You know, the Rottweilers will kill you if you cry. I have to move quickly as he screeches in fury and tries to bludgeon me in the head. The power of his rage is so intense that it flays our telepathic connection. His thoughts vanish from my mind, and he goes after me. But no longer am I fighting the careful, cunning Tarquin. This guy is mindless, a raging, furious child throwing a tantrum. All his years of training are forgotten. He uses his sword like a battle axe, swinging carelessly, trying to annihilate me. The judges, noticing the change, are shouting that the trial is over, but Tarquin can't hear them. Perhaps he doesn't even know where he is anymore. He's no longer fighting me. He's a little boy raging at his bully cousins. I jump to the left as he swings, his sword lodging itself deeply in the ground. As he tries to pull it out, I bash his face with the pommel of my rapier. I feel his nose crunching. As hard as I can, I kick his wrist, and a bone snaps. He screams in agony as I jump back. His hand dangles at his side uselessly, his sword stuck in the ground. At last, Rythe shouts that the trial is over. The cadets are roaring, screaming. I can hardly catch my breath as I glance at the judges. Rythe and Amon both look horrified. But Vivianne meets my eyes, and her lips twist in a tiny smile. There's a small grin on my lips as I watch Tana and Serana battling each other in the tilt yard. For them, it's the last trial. They've aced everything else, and I can tell by the distinctly coordinated whirling and swinging that they've choreographed this. Serana's ginger hair flows around her as she pivots gracefully. Today, the summer sun beams down on us. It's been a few days since my tournament against Tarquin, and my muscles still ache. But today's competition is a dance, not a battle. Serana has even allowed Tana to draw a little blood to make it look real. But I already know that neither of them will end up hurt. Darius leans into me and whispers,
If Serana were actually fighting Tana, she'd possibly be dead by now. Let's hope Tana doesn't face any real threats in the field.
We'll all keep her safe, I clear my throat, assuming I pass.
You'll pass, he says. Can you believe I got copper? I didn't even think I'd pass at all. I was certain I'd be culled.
Darius has a habit of fishing for compliments, and I have a habit of indulging him. Don't be ridiculous. Of course you passed. You're brilliant. We all know this.
Thank you, love. Are you nervous for your magic trial tomorrow?
My stomach clenches, and I feel like I want to throw up. Nope.
Liar. Hold your arms, Amon shouts. The trial is concluded. By a small margin, Serana O'Rourke is the winner.
My breath catches. They're about to announce the torques. I watch as the trio of judges confer for a few minutes in a tense huddle. Vivianne is pulling out papers, pointing to them. I swallow hard. At last, Vivianne turns to the arena, and the wind whips at her blonde hair.
Tana Campbell, she bellows. Silver. Darius grabs my arm in a death grip, grinning. She's a knight! She's a fucking knight! Serana O'Rourke, Vivienne calls out. Silva! I feel the grin splitting my face from ear to ear. Holy shit! This almost makes up for the fact that Tarquin and Horatio got gold. They're going to be insufferable. Well, they didn't earn theirs, did they? Tarquin lost to you, but these talks actually make sense. Darius is bouncing in his seat, and he reaches down to pick up a blue paperback. I knew it. I fucking knew it. I mean, I didn't realize it would be silver, but I knew they'd pass, obviously. He pulls out a bottle of champagne and with a whoop uncorks it. Champagne fizz bursts over the people in front of us and they yelp with irritation. Suppressing a laugh, I say, don't you want to wait for the two knights? No, I'm drinking this now. I've got twilight cake too. It's time to bloody celebrate. Also, they're knights now, so who knows if they'll even hang out with us anymore. They'll be at the knights' dining hall from now on. He lifts the bottle to my lips. And you, Miss Nia, are going to do fine tomorrow. Absolutely fine. I take a sip of bubbly, and he pulls it away, admonishing. Not too much, love. You need to be clear-headed tomorrow. Rive will try to mess you up, you know. He raises the bottle to his lips and pours the champagne down his throat. What exactly might Rive have planned for tomorrow? Chapter 37. I stand on a balcony overlooking the smooth, misty lake. Oak and apple trees line the calm shore. In the fall air, I can smell the apples growing. I've come out here to clear my thoughts before my final trial, one that I'll be undertaking in front of every instructor and cadet at Avalon Tower. I don't need any more dire warnings about how if I fail, everyone dies. Just the thought of being stared at by so many people has made me too nervous to eat. My lungs feel tight as I breathe in the foggy air. It's cloudy today by the lake, and the chill crawls down my collar, settling on my skin. Mist roils and twists over the glassy surface. I still have no idea what it means that I'm the Lady of the Lake, if that's true. But I feel drawn to this calm pool of water. I'm at home here. Did Queen Morgan rule from across this lake? I've never seen what's on the other side. As I think about her, the prince's dark voice whispers in my thoughts. The shadows play in the quiet, stony solitude of my chamber. The cold night speaks to me, whispering of my final kiss. The goddess of death, her wicked tongue blessing mine. Fuck off, Talon. I shiver, feeling like the quiet, cold air of the lake is freezing me to the bone. It worked, though. My thoughts are clearer now. Turning, I head back through the balcony door, hugging myself as I walk through the towering Gothic halls. By now, the calling has ended for most cadets. But I have one more trial, the Sentinel trial, and I'm on my way right now, my nerves buzzing like the hum of the veil. I can hear it as I approach the combat hall. The magical mist thrums through the corridor. In about 10 minutes, I'm going to be tested on my skill with the veil. There's a lump in my throat and I swallow hard. If I manage it, I'll become an official agent of Camelot. If I fail, beyond the terrible physical pain that the practice veil tends to unleash, I'll be culled, and everyone will die. All eyes are on me as I walk through the vaulted corridor, but I don't look at anyone. I shouldn't be worried. I've done it with the real veil a bunch of times before, but I always get more nervous in front of a crowd. This final trial has become one of the most talked about, the final test of the culling. Serana told me people are placing bets on me, and that the odds aren't in my favor. I'm not entirely sure why everyone thinks I'm doomed to fuck up. It's not like I've messed up any of the missions so far. As I approach the combat hall, I see Raphael standing before a set of towering carved oak double doors. Naveen stands by his side, her cherry red hair tied up in a bun. Nia, he says. Hey, I answer weakly. You're all messed up, Naveen blurts. Diametric. Cursed. I raise an eyebrow. You know, you really have a way with people. I mean, you're a sentinel and a telepath. It weakens your powers and turns you mad. I press a finger to my lips and cut a sharp look at Raphael. I thought you said to tell no one. And why are you bringing this up now when I'm supposed to be focusing? Naveen can help, Raphael says. We have a few minutes before the trial starts. I'm thrown off by this change in the plan. I'd been trying to clear my head, not learn new things at the last moment. It's fine, I say. I've handled the veil before.
The real veil, not this fake one. You have nothing to worry about.
I know what he needs to hear. This will be easy.
You don't understand,
Raphael says. And for the first time since the assassin's attack, I see him almost afraid.
This is not the veil in a box we used during training. There's a veil mage working with MI-13. He's the one creating the veil for this trial, and he's in the pocket of the Pendragons. Rythe is furious that you beat Tarquin. It makes their gold talks look like a fraud, so he's primed this mage. The man is extremely skilled, and he's going to make this nearly impossible for you to pass.
Ah, so that's why everyone's betting against me. Naveen looks pale.
I've just been in there. This veil barrier he's creating, it's the real thing, and it will kill you if you don't disrupt it completely.
She grips my bicep tightly, her fingernails digging in.
Kill you.
Fear cuts me down to the bone, but I force myself to shrug and give them a placid smile. Fine, but how hard can it be compared to the real veil? It's thousands of miles long and rises above the clouds and sinks under the sea. This can't be more powerful than that. It's all contained in the combat hall. Naveen turns to Raphael, scowling.
I thought she's supposed to be intelligent.
Raphael sighs.
Naveen, that's not the way.
The entire problem is that it's a smaller veil,
Naveen barks. Her words echo off the high ceiling.
The border veil is large, so it's stretched thin. You've seen it yourself, I'm sure. When you look at how the veil is built, you can actually see the holes and weaknesses in its structure because it's spread out so far.
Tension weaves through the air, sharpening the atmosphere. She's right. That's exactly what I see every time.
This one is condensed into a single room, she hisses. A force so powerful, it'll disintegrate you if you step in it without your magic. Evaporate. We'll send your remains back to your mother in a matchbox. Just dust.
I feel the blood draining from my face. Are you trying to scare me until I can't think straight?
I'm trying to say, she goes on, you'll need all your focus to disrupt it, okay? And right now your powers are unstable because they're powers, plural, fucked up.
Okay. I still don't know what she wants from me, but I now feel like puking. Raphael is studying me closely and his eyes seem to have more contrast than ever. The pale silver ringed with bright blue. His dark eyelashes lower. But the way he's staring at me, I feel as if he's reading all my secrets. Like he's telepathic. Sometimes I get the sense he knows exactly how much I think about him, and about every time we kissed, and about the way I felt, wrapped in his strong arms as he healed me, his hand on my stomach. Then I'd felt safe around him. Right now, I have absolutely no idea what he's thinking, but the intense look in his eyes has my nerves fluttering. His unreadable expression often has the power to unnerve me. It's fine, you two, I say. I know I need to suppress the telepathy.
But that doesn't work, does it?
Says Raphael coolly.
That's why I'm here, Naveen says. Sentinels don't just disrupt veils, we disrupt magic in general. If you cooperate, I can sever your telepathic powers. For good.
My stomach drops, and I take a step back. Hang on! Naveen steps in closer.
Sentinels are surgeons. Professor Throckmorton discovered this technique a few years ago to remove power from Fey prisoners. Now, obviously, I don't want to remove your sentinel powers, but what if I could remove your telepathy? Granted, I've never tried it before, but I think it's possible. I can already feel it inside you. Violet, isn't it? It has a wild, frenetic energy. Give me your hand.
She holds out her palm.
I'll see what I can do.
My blood roars in my ears. I hadn't realized until now exactly how attached I feel to the voices I hear, to this power, or that my instinct tells me I need to keep it. Naveen frowns at me.
I'll guide you through it. Come on, we don't have much time.
She shakes her palm.
Nia, take my hand.
I'll be fine without your help. I need to tell them what they want to hear, or they'll rip part of me away. I've actually managed to control my telepathy at this point. I don't even sense it at all now. It's suppressed.
You're lying, says Naveen.
Nia, Raphael says. You must do this. Avalon Tower needs another sentinel. This isn't just for you. Lives depend on your sentinel powers.
My heart pounds against my ribs. My telepathy is part of me. I'm not going to let them take it away. It was the power that saved me during that combat trial. And that mission? We never would have found the map without this skill.
But that's not what Raphael needs to hear, is it? And I don't really know how to explain it to him, because it's mostly just instinct. I plaster a smile on my face. Why bother with this when I've got it under control?
You told me that you don't even like hearing those voices,
Raphael says.
Nia, I know this is not ideal.
He reaches out and touches my arm. His eyes are pleading. Warmth from his fingertips pours into me.
But if you don't do this, I'm afraid you will die.
I wonder how much that would bother him on a personal level versus just robbing MI-13 of another desperately needed sentinel.
Even I can't disrupt the veil he's conjuring there,
Naveen says.
Well, I probably can. I'm really good at this, but I'm not plagued with diametric magic, and I'm much better trained.
Naveen, stop,
Raphael says sharply. Her nostrils flare.
Fine. Talk some sense into her. But better be quick because they're about to start, and I can sense that her magic is more conflicted and erratic than ever.
She pivots and stalks into the hall.
You're not telling the truth, are you?
Raphael's eyes search mine like he's trying to read me. He's sifting through each one of my secrets. I can feel it, and it sends a shiver up my spine. Does he know that every night before I go to sleep I think of him, of being curled up in his arms and breathing his scent? A bell rings inside the hall, signaling that I'm about to start. I swallow hard. Tell people the things they need to hear to calm them down. My ever-faithful strategy. I'm going to go in now, I say in a dulcet tone I always use to placate Mom and give him a sweet smile. It will be fine, Raphael. You taught me everything I need to know. You're a brilliant teacher. I clean up messes. It's what I do. I keep people calm, happy, and safe. I'm a balm to soothe panic and rage and bare feet pierced with broken glass. I'm a blanket of fog to cool a sofa burning from a lit cigarette. I smile at the police when they come to the door, and I get them to leave happy. Everything will be fine, I say again, touching his shoulder. His eyes' cold gaze doesn't soften. The heavy wooden doors to the main hall are shut, and I push them open with all my strength. They slam against the walls, announcing me with a loud crash. The room falls still, and everyone turns to look at me. Cadets and teachers pack the chamber, seated on rows of bleachers that surround the combat hall. Just for me. There are even some faces I haven't seen in Avalon Tower before. Members of MI-13 who've come to watch me, including some with gold torques. In the center of the room, the veil writhes before the mage. Its power is immense, the humming in my ears drowning out everything else. A roiling cloud of magical mist shimmering with colors, thick and impossible to look through it. It's not very big, 10 feet high maybe, and 6 feet wide, a gleaming wall of magic towering over me. A few feet away from the veil stands Writhe, and a figure draped in black robes. The Veil Magician.
Nia.
Raphael's deep voice stops me in my tracks, and I look back at him.
I gave you an order, Nia. I ordered you to tell me the truth.
I stare at him aghast. Why is he so determined to fuck up my focus right before the trial that means everything? Right here, in front of everyone. Not now, I whisper. I can feel everyone staring at us.
Not now.
His voice is cold and quiet. It's like I don't quite know him anymore.
I'm a knight. I'm not your friend, Nia. I brought you to this academy for a reason, and it wasn't because I liked you. I need you to be a sentinel. I don't know what foolish notions you've got in your head, but you should have done as I told you. I see now that I was right about you before, wasn't I? You're a spoiled, selfish girl who grew up in dissolute chaos, and as a consequence you know nothing of the real world, or of war, or of what it means to make sacrifices for other people. As far as you're concerned, this is all a game.
I stare at him, stunned. My cheeks flame red and my stomach twists with nausea. What happened to you? His face is an expressionless mask.
What happened to me? I don't think you understand.
He leans closer.
I don't think I like you very much, and I never have.
He seems to hesitate for a moment, and his fingers tighten into fists.
From what I can tell now, trash is a perfectly accurate description.
There it is. The blow I've been waiting for all along. The heartbreak I knew he'd deliver. My eyes sting, and a lump forms in my throat. He's the same fucking Raphael he always was. The one who ruined my life all those years ago. A bolt of rage thuds in my head. making it hard to think. I turn away from him, stepping deeper into the room. The veil's humming is muffled now because all I hear is the rhythmic beating of my own heart. My chest is aching and hollow. My gaze flicks to the enormous portrait of Merlin hanging on the wall. He wears a deep blue robe flecked with silver stars. I think of him, imprisoned in that oak tree by the woman he loved, sealed up, abandoned, with roots growing into his chest. I am the cold mist coiling over the lake, I tell myself. I pause, fury igniting my blood. I turn back to Raphael. A woman with white blonde hair stands beside him, and it takes me a minute to remember her name. Ginevra, I think. The Pendragon agent with a gold torque. She's tall and elegant, her hair neatly swept up into something like a tiara, and she's whispering to him, her eyes sliding to me. I'm now utterly distracted from the extremely important task I'm about to undertake. But right now, I'm not the calming, soothing Nia who wants to make everyone feel better. Right now, I'm a raging tempest churning the lake waters. I'm the sword forged in fire beneath its surface. I narrow my eyes at Raphael. Do you know what, Lancelot? My voice echoes off the hall. His attention cuts to me, and Ginevra stares at me with raised brows. Heat ebbs from my veins, and I feel as if I'm turning to ice. You've proven yourself to be the same self-obsessed twat you always were. You don't have to be wealthy to think you're better than everyone else, do you? To some people, arrogance comes just as naturally as breathing. And in reality, Raphael, I saved your ass more than once. You egomaniacal, solipsistic, stuck-up prick. Do not speak to me again unless it's an order. Unless it's life or death. You're not good enough to speak to me, and you never were. My words have a growl in them that echoes off the combat hall. Raphael visibly flinches. Good. The hum and buzz of the veil returns, and wrath floods my veins. I turn back to the veil mage. I know everyone is staring, stunned. I know they'll be talking about this for weeks. But right now, I don't give a fuck what they think. Chapter 38. My cheeks are flushed with anger, and molten rage flows through my blood. Aemon is telling me something, perhaps explaining the terms of the trial, but I can't hear him over the ringing in my ears. And in any case, I don't need instructions. Rhyth interrupts Aemon, bellowing an introduction. Something about how he's the seneschal, and it's his job to protect us from getting our hopes up. That this test separates the chaff from the wheat, and clearly I'm the chaff. But all I'm really listening to is the screaming hiss of my own fury. I don't think I like you very much, and I never have.
The trial of the veil is about to begin, Rhyth calls out. Within the veil we have placed a replica of Merlin's wand. Ms. Melisande will have to...
I move toward the veil before he even finishes and summon my magic, letting the red bloom a furious cloud. Red, the color of wrath. As I move closer, I immediately see what Naveen was talking about. The shimmering energy strands that make up the veil are enmeshed so densely that I can't see any points of weakness in the magic. Nothing thin or fragile. No place to channel my magic. This veil is a wall of death. Raphael's words are still echoing in my skull. This is all a game to you. From what I can tell now, trash is a perfectly accurate description. My heart hammers. A war drum. Burning with rage, I pull at my magic, and it fuels the hot crimson inside me. I don't bother searching for a weak spot. I hurl my magic at the veil, my teeth grinding together. To my right, the veil magician stumbles, then falls flat on his back. The buzz of the veil sputters and dies, and silence fills the hall. I hear only my own pounding pulse. When the mist is completely silent and no longer buzzing over my skin, I stride inside. Pearly white fog wraps around me. My foot kicks something, and I hear it spinning across the floor. I reach down for the wand and grip its gnarled wood. I march out of the veil and toss it at Rhyth's feet. It clatters noisily. There you go, I say. Your wand, sir. The veil mist slowly dissipates, and the mage seems to be unconscious. A buzz of whispers fills the combat hall. I hear little snatches of what they're saying. Did you see? Didn't even slow her down. The veil mage just dropped. Rhyth stands, arms folded, glaring. His blonde mustache twitches.
I'm so disappointed to have to say this.
his voice booms across the hall.
But as seneschal of this institution, I must protect you all. It is my job to shield you all from cheaters and liars. Clearly Miss Melisande has found a way to cheat. No one can simply step into a powerful veil like that without preparation. A veil this powerful takes time to dismantle. We all know that. Of course, this is the risk we take when letting anyone in, regardless of background.
Sorry to disappoint, I raise my own voice, but maybe your veil magician sucks. Everyone connected to you is here by virtue of nepotism. His fingers twitch.
Do you really think I'd let a cadet get away with speaking to the seneschal like that? And after what you just said to another knight?
He roars, looking for agreement around him.
We have protocols and procedures here. We have deference for those in superior positions, and at Avalon Tower we do not cheat. So why don't you tell me who you had helping you? Is it the other sentinel, Naveen?
Fury still burns through me from Raphael's words. I'm not a cadet anymore, I say. I just passed, and I'm an agent of Camelot. This is not just a game to me, and despite what some of the knights might think, I belong here. He lunges forward.
As seneschal, I'm saying you did not.
He grabs my arm in fury. As I'm already thrumming with power, my telepathy engages at the sudden touch, connecting me to Rythe's mind. Tendrils of violet spiral out from me, slipping into his thoughts. I get my first glimpse into Rythe's psyche. What shocks me is how empty it is, like a void. Even when I read Tarquin's mind, I could feel his belief and fear. He believed he was better than me, and under that, he was afraid he couldn't prove it. He believed in his family and the importance of being a Pendragon, and needed to prove himself to them. And even though he's a twat, he believed in taking down Oberon, that it's important, and that without it, humanity will fall. But Rythe has none of that. He has no beliefs beyond his own desperation to climb up the rungs of power in MI-13. He wants to lead Avalon Tower simply because he craves power. He doesn't care for the lives of the agents or the humans he's supposed to protect. To my shock, he doesn't even care about Tarquin or the rest of the Pendragons. The only reason he treats them differently is because of how they reflect on him being his kin. He values their loyalty to him because it secures his position. But there is only one real person in Rythe's mind. Rythe. In his twisted mind, I'm an obstacle on his way up. He has to prove I don't belong here simply because that was his opinion when he first arrived, and he needs people to believe he's infallible. That he's the only one who can lead. That only through unrelenting loyalty to him will Avalon Tower prevail, because he is the only one with answers.
I never wanted the demi-fae here.
Is that why Raphael had made a public spectacle of telling me I don't belong here? So he can prove himself to Rice?
Get on board with referring to me as a useless waste of space if you want to keep your position.
I'm already burning with rage, and Rythe's narcissistic thoughts are like pouring oil on a flame. Molten fury erupts inside me, and my red and violet magic fuse together, my telepathy and sentinel powers intertwining to create that hybrid chaotic force. I slam it into Rythe's mind and pour myself into his skull. Such a simple mind, focused on one pathetic motivation, a simple mind to prod and push. And I do, demolishing the weak walls he has within, taking his thoughts for my own. I will bind my enemies in the oak trees to feed the hungry earth. I will spill your blood into the lake. Rythe stumbles back and blinks, dazed. Then he opens his mouth.
Nia Melisande is incredible, he shouts for everyone to hear. She has surpassed my estimations in all the trials, proving she is a worthy agent of Camelot, and she has, without question, passed this trial. Furthermore, I want to add that I am a twat, caring for no one but myself. Having me as a seneschal is an insult to the great history of this academy, and...
The connection between us snaps, and his mind vanishes from my own. Silence settles in the hall, and I feel as if the whole academy is holding its breath. I'm shivering, the result of an explosion of my magic. I hug myself, clenching my teeth to avoid them from chattering. Rythe points at me with one trembling finger.
She was in my mind, he bellows. She forced me to say that. This is an attack on the seneschal, a psychic attack, and an attack on a knight of the round table is an attack on Avalon Tower itself. This is the very reason we did not allow Demi-Fay here.
Amon looks utterly confused.
Wraith, what are you talking about? How would her sentinel powers allow her to control you?
Wraith's eyes widen as he realizes the implication.
You've got diametric powers, he snarls. You have two types of magic just like the monster Mordred Kingslayer. Of course. I knew something was corrupted about her. And this is why she doesn't belong. Don't you see how dangerous this is?
Amon stares at me, frowning.
Surely that cannot be. If Nia has diametric magic, it would be unstable and weak. It would destroy her. But we've seen her in the trials, and like you just said, she surpassed our estimations in the trials, including this one. That's simply not how diametric powers work. She did not pass the trial,
Wraith shouts.
She made me say that she did. I felt her in my thoughts. I felt her malignant presence, as rotten and corrupted as Mordred himself.
Another silence follows his condemnation, and then excited murmurs throughout the hall. Amon's silver torque gleams under the light of the chandeliers.
Are you saying she's capable of mind control, of compulsion?
Even I am caught unaware. Mind control? No, of course not. Wraith's mind was so simple, so one-sided. Even a child could manipulate it. Right? Wraith himself had taught us about the five primal powers, weather manipulation, amoromancy, polymorphism, compulsion, and conjuration. The five primal powers. The powers that don't exist anymore in Broceliande or beyond it. Obviously, I can't do that if it no longer exists. Wraith blinks.
As I said, she is an enemy of Avalon Tower. She should be imprisoned at once. This is treason.
Raphael stalks closer. I avoid looking at him, feeling the rage seething within me at his presence. He looks just as furious as he did before. He turns to the crowd, his icy eyes surveying them.
Everybody out.
His voice carries over the hall.
This is a matter for the Knights of the Round Table, no one else.
His voice has a quiet command that immediately has them leaping up and shuffling for the doors. I turn to join them when Raphael says,
"Not you, Nia. You stay."
I fold my arms, trying not to glare at him, because that would be petulant. There are bigger things at stake right now. I catch the worried eyes of my friends as they leave, and someone helps the dazed Veil Mage up off the floor. Finally, the door shuts. The only people in the room are Vivienne, Raphael, Wraith, Amon, and me. Just a few Knights of the Round Table and me.
You knew about this,
Wraith hisses at Raphael.
About what?
Raphael quirks an eyebrow. So now he has my back? Dickhead. Wraith's eyes narrow at Raphael.
Is there something going on between you two? Something that would get you kicked out of Avalon Tower?
Don't be ridiculous, I say sharply.
As you may have heard me say,
Raphael adds in a glacial tone,
I don't like her very much, and I find her personality irritating. But like it or not, her magical powers will be an asset to MI-13.
I stare at him, anger still coursing through my veins.
The girl has diametric powers, says Wraith. Did you know? Did you cover that up? Yes, I knew,
Raphael says quietly. My heart sinks. Why is he telling them?
And you didn't think you had to share it with us,
says Wraith.
With the Seneschal?
He loves referring to himself in the third person.
I shared it with the people who needed to know,
Raphael says.
You didn't need to know. I technically outrank you. You've brought a mongrel into Avalon Tower, one with diametric magic. Do I need to remind you about Mordred? You let her participate in critical missions, risking the other agents.
I'll remind you that I was at each of those missions, Wraith, Raphael says.
If anyone's life was at risk, it was mine.
And mine, adds Vivienne. Raphael cuts her a sharp look.
Ania's powers and skills saved us several times. Whatever Raphael should or should not have told us,
Vivienne says, I am clear on one thing. She passed the last trial. She's now an agent. These are our rules, our protocols and procedures. On the last two words, I'm pretty sure she's mimicking Wraith's plummy accent. Wraith shakes his head in disgust.
She clearly cheated her way through. A random person from off the streets.
I didn't cheat, I say.
Quiet, girl. I don't even know why you're here,
Wraith snaps at me.
Fine, we can use her as a sentinel like you first suggested when she came here, Raphael. She can open the way for Abela Cruz. She's the transportation. If you all insist, I don't even mind giving her a brass talk. But I'll be damned if she...
I'm sorry. A brass talk? Vivian says. Didn't we agree she passed the shadow trial with the highest score?
She passed the written trial with the highest score as well,
Amon says.
Raphael nods.
And during the combat trial, she beat Tarquin Pendragon, and if I'm not mistaken, he got a full score for that trial, so obviously she does as well.
And this trial? Vivian raises her eyebrow. Well, I don't know what you'd call what she demonstrated here.
I can't believe this,
Rythe seethes.
Do you really want to give this wretch something above a brass?
A gold talk matches her results, Vivian says. I can only stare at them with my mouth ajar. A gold torque? Like Raphael's? My heart flutters.
No,
Amon says. We all look at him.
Finally, someone with some sense, Rythe blurts.
Amon nods gravely.
I am Avalon's historian, and I know all of our laws and ceremonies. There's only one precedent for this. Only one fae from Avalon Tower's history had one of the primal powers.
Amon looks up at the wall. My eyes follow his to the painting that hangs above the combat hall. Merlin.
The founders were clear,
Amon says.
There are individuals that carry a different torque. Those are the founders of Avalon Tower. King Arthur, Sir Galahad, and Camelot's primal sorcerers, like Merlin.
Not like Merlin,
Rythe sputters.
Just Merlin. He was Camelot's only primal sorcerer.
Merlin passed the tower's trials, which were then conducted by the Lady of the Lake,
Amon says.
He would have received a gold torque, but because he could manipulate the weather, and that is a primal power, she gave him a torque of Avalon steel, forged by dragonfire.
You want to give her Avalon steel? Are you mad?
Rythe splutters. Amon shrugs and looks at the ground.
I don't want to. I have to. We have protocols.
Protocols and procedures, Rythe, Vivian says again in his accent.
Because you think she has mind control powers?
Rythe's voice becomes unhinged.
Compulsion?
You just told us that she did.
Amon frowns,
that she made you say what you did.
Or did you really mean what you said when you called yourself a twat? Vivian asks.
What is the point of being cynical when I have two demi-fae working against me?
Rythe snarls and cuts a sharp look to Amon.
And a bearded idiot from the common classes. This place is going to hell, do you know that? It's all falling apart.
He pivots and storms off, slamming the doors behind him.
Now then,
Amon beams.
Nia Melisande, welcome to Avalon Tower. We will grant you the torque the moment we can get our hands on Avalon steel. There is not much of it left, because it has to be forged on a stone in the lake using dragonfire. But rules are rules.
Vivian turns to cross out of the hall. She throws open the door. The entire academy is out there waiting. She stares at them for a moment, then lifts her chin and shouts, Avalon steel! And at her words, all hell breaks loose. Chapter 39. I knock three times on an imposing set of dark oak doors, the thick wood reinforced with nails. I glance back at Tana and Serana. They're staring at the door, their shoulders hunched, expressions tense. Serana has a coffee stain on her shirt, but it's too late for her to change. We're on the top floor of Merlin's Tower, the one no one is allowed to visit unless summoned. None of us know why we've been called, only that the Knights of the Round Table are waiting for us on the other side of the door. Do you have any sense of what they want? I ask Tana desperately. She shakes her head and crosses her arms in front of her chest. She's been quiet and withdrawn the past few days, and I keep hearing her moaning in her sleep. I'm well aware that there's something she's not telling me. I hope they're not changing their minds about us becoming knights, Serana mutters, fingering her silver torque nervously. They can't do that, right? At this point? Torchlight burns from columns on either side of the door, wavering over the carvings that rise up 20 feet.
On one side of the wood are engravings of swords, crowns, and a scepter, symbols of royalty. On the other are twisting nature symbols, a man's face formed with leaves, and plants with three leaves. My gaze slides to the top of the door. Etched in the stone is the cycle of the moon. Shadows from the burning torches dance over the stone walls and floor. At last, the door groans open. Slowly, the three of us cross inside. I stare in awe at the hall, the size of a particularly large cathedral. Pale blue light flows in through an ornate window 100 feet high. The pearly rays gleam off a round table of polished wood so large that it seats about 50 chairs. Only about 10 of them are empty, and the rest of the knights are staring at us. Naveen is among them, her scarlet hair like a flame in the streaming sunlight. Flanked by Tana and Serana, I slowly walk across the flagstone floor. I try not to look at Raphael. Instead, I keep my eyes on the tall portraits on the far side of the hall. They span from the floor to 20 feet above. Arthur, Merlin, and Guinevere, each of them wearing a metal torque, pale with a hint of rose. Avalon steel. Mine isn't ready yet, and that means I'm the only one here without a torque. I glance at the round table again. I didn't realize there were quite this many round table knights. And as much as I try to avoid looking at Raphael, I can't help it. My gaze always goes to him, whether I want it or not. His beauty is like a command I can't ignore. The pale light glints from his eyes, making them spark like metal. These are the most important MI-13 agents in the world, and I only want to look at him. With a sinking heart, I realize Genevra Pendragon is sitting by his side. She wears her hair long, with a few braids threaded with jewels. In the pale light, she looks more beautiful than ever. When I glance at the portrait of Guinevere on the wall, I can see the clear resemblance. It occurs to me that she must have been named after her ancestor. She leans in, whispering to Raphael. Her eyes are on me again, a smile on her lips. I feel my face flush. This is exactly why romance is forbidden here, because my mind is very much not on task, and I have to stop myself from walking out the door. It's been a week since I last spoke to him, when we screamed at each other. Soon after the trial, part of me wondered if his outburst was calculated. Did he know that making me angry would bring out my power? But when he failed to show up at any point to explain himself, I realized that might be false hope. If his insults were fake, the man had plenty of time in the past week to let me know. It wasn't like he'd been away on a mission. I'd seen him around, and when I did, he simply looked the other way. I breathe in deeply, scanning the rest of the table. Of the 40 or so around the table, Raphael and Genevra are the only ones wearing gold. The rest are silver. So where are the other Pendragons? Vivienne gestures at the empty chairs. Sit, please. The three of us walk over to the empty chairs. We sit down just as the doors groan closed behind us. I feel the power of the table hum over my skin. On the other side of the hall, the portrait of Merlin clicks, and the entire thing creaks open. A man steps through it, looking like a warrior who traveled through time. He has a long gray beard, and his face is lined with age. Unlike the rest of the people in the room, he's dressed in actual chainmail armor with a silvery breastplate. And emblazoned on the breastplate is the Merlin Court coat of arms I've seen around this tower, one with an owl, stars, and the cycle of the moon. His armor groans as he crosses the large hall. For a moment, I wonder if the rumors are true. If Merlin never died, and maybe he's returned to us through his own portrait. But this man looks nothing like Merlin, and he wears a silver torque. Who is that? I whisper to Serana. Sike, she whispers. He's the leader of MI-13. He crosses to an empty chair set at the round table and takes a seat.
Thank you all for coming on such short notice.
His deep, commanding voice resonates around the room.
What we're discussing today is of the utmost secrecy. There will be no sharing of any of this with anyone at the Academy, or obviously outside it.
I exchange looks with Tana and Serana. What are the three of us even doing here?
As you all know, MI-13's efforts are held back by the Veil.
He continues.
We make do with our sentinels opening the way to small task forces, but it has limited our options.
Naveen raises her eyebrow at me and nods.
The Veil is maintained by the Phase Magicians, adds Sir Kay. Up until 2 months ago, there were 10. However, one of them was sent to assassinate one of our sentinels and was killed. He glances for the briefest second in my direction. And another Veil magician was sent to take out our entire cadet force, and was also, luckily, stopped and killed. He clears his throat and takes another glance at me. There are now 8 remaining, which is better than 10. 10 minus 2 equals 8. My first grade teacher, Mrs. Mermenstein, would be proud of us all.
8 Veil magicians are still enough to maintain the veil around Fey France, he continues. However, according to our scholars, 7 are not.
Around the table, others start to murmur as well. Then Sir Kay thumps the table and silence falls over the hall.
The 2 attacks by Veil magicians have demonstrated that the Fey are scaling up their aggressive operations, he says. This is already enough to indicate their plans for something even bigger in the future. But if that wasn't enough, one of MI-13's most powerful psychics is with us in the room. Now a knight herself. Miss Campbell, would you share with the room what you told me yesterday?
All eyes turn to Tana. I can see the tension around her mouth, but she lifts her chin. I've seen a terrible force coming from the Fey realm in the near future. Avalon Tower falls, taken apart stone by stone, and the blood of our agents feeds the earth. I've seen the death of each and every one of the courageous knights and agents in this room. The bodies lying unburied, picked at by scavengers, and soon after humanity will follow. A terrible silence follows her words. I stare at my friend, and her dark eyes gleam. I have no doubt she's actually seen those images. I've heard her crying in her sleep. Now I know why. Is it definite? Naveen asks. Or something that can be stopped? Tana shakes her head. It's not written in stone, but we don't have long to stop it, she says. A few weeks.
Fuck that, Naveen says.
Yes, Sir Kay says. As our eloquent sentinel points out, this is not ideal. We need to bolster our defences,
a knight with white hair calls out.
The time for being on the defensive has passed,
Sir Kay says.
Thanks to the efforts of our agents, we've procured a map of critical military locations in the Fey realm. We've been researching these locations, collecting information. 6 of them, along the border, house Fey Veil magicians. As I've explained, once one of them dies, the Veil becomes unstable. It is then that we can move large forces and strike, hitting other critical locations and stopping the upcoming Fey attack that Dame Campbell has seen in her visions.
This is a mission briefing, the largest and most important I've ever been in, and it's already clear what he wants us to do.
The people in this room are the best agents among MI-13,
Sir Kay says, his gaze circling the room, meeting each one's eyes.
And we're sending you on the riskiest mission we've taken since the Fey invasion. We will send 2 groups to 2 locations along the border. Once there, our sentinels will open the way to move inside Fey France. Each group will split into 3 small task forces and move toward the locations of the magicians. There will be 6 task forces altogether. We need you to kill the magicians. 1 is enough, but 6 is even better. Once that happens, the veil will fall, and I will lead a large surprise attack into Fey France.
What about the Pendragons? Naveen asks. I can't help but notice that almost none of them are here. But of course you did say the best agents are all here, didn't you? So I suppose that's no mystery at all. Geneva looks furious at this, which gives me a tiny shiver of pleasure. Sir Kay sighs dramatically, and I get the sense that this is a long-repeated argument. Perhaps one of those arguments that made Naveen bad at politics. If they weren't so desperate for sentinels, I'm pretty sure she'd be long gone.
Apart from Geneva, the Pendragons will remain in Avalon Tower, monitoring our progress,
Sir Kay finally says. Naveen snorts. Right, sitting on their incompetent arses while we risk our lives and they reap.
Thank you, Naveen, Sir Kay snaps. Your contribution, as always, is very much appreciated. The task forces have already been established, and I will now read them out. Group 1, Freya and Serana. Group 2, Naveen, Melihand, and Tana. Group 3, Vivienne and Antero. Group 4, Nia, Geneva, and Raphael. Group 5.
He goes on, but I don't follow as he lists the rest of the groups. My task force includes me, Raphael, and a woman who might be his lover. I catch his eye, and my chest cracks open. Chapter 40.
I crouch behind a rock, the crisp September air rushing over my skin through the thin fabric of my dress. There's enough of a chill today that the dewdrops have nearly turned to frost, and my elegant fey disguise doesn't offer much protection against the cold wind. From a hillside, Geneva and I are watching a small town nestled between fiery, autumn-touched hills, just inside the border of Fey France. From where we hide, a little dirt path wends down the hill to a cluster of stone houses and shops, and a church steeple gleams in the sunlight. I peer through a metal spyglass at an ivory mansion at the edge of the town and the enormous ivy-covered walls that surround it. The Vale Mage's mansion wasn't hard to find. At 3 stories high, it towers over most of the other buildings in town, and the front gate looks fit for a king. It's a gorgeous place. Creamy stone with pale blue shutters that match the double front door. And somewhere in there is the fae we need to kill. I peer through the lens again. The mansion is about 300 yards away, but with the spyglass, I can easily see who goes in and out, making a mental note of each one. We've been here for over an hour, searching for signs of an ambush, and my muscles ache as I crouch. Somewhere in that town, Raphael is scoping things out up close. Soon after we got through the veil, he rode ahead of us to scout, leaving us in the company of each other for the majority of the journey. Neither of us was grateful for that. The golden light shines off Geneva's sun-kissed skin.
Well, American, I don't care what anyone says about you. You are truly a scintillating conversationalist.
I glance at her and raise an eyebrow, saying nothing.
Sorry, you know what? She continues. What I actually meant to say is that I'm about to die of boredom after traveling for 2 days in your bloody tedious company. Do they not teach you how to speak in America? Or do they just sit you in front of a TV when you're a baby and hope for the best?
Geneva refuses to call me by my name, and at this point, I'm all out of patience with the Pendragon attitude, so I've hardly spoken a word to her. I let silence fill the air again and turn my attention back to the tavern. It's going to be our first stop on our mission.
It's a shame I wasn't sent alone with Ralph, she adds. He and I get along very well indeed. I know he's demi-fey, but he's different to the others, isn't he? He's intelligent. Instead, I've got you for company.
I clench my jaw. I don't see anything of concern yet, I say sharply, ignoring her bullshit. No hidden weapons that I could spot on anyone going in or out.
One of the men had a knife in his boot, she says,
her own glass held to her eye.
Perhaps that's the kind of thing you'd notice with more experience, but I don't think it's a major concern.
Good. She turns to me, narrowing her sapphire eyes.
Do they really give you Avalon steel on the basis of one trial?
I plaster a smile on my face. I received top scores in all other trials as well. I've earned it.
Ridiculous, she mutters. I doubt you actually have a primal power. It should have been tested more thoroughly. How does anyone know you didn't bribe